Welcome back to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. I am your host, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, and it is time for a Worldview Watch segment that is trying to discern, learning how to think with your theology, to use it to understand the world around you and apply it. And today, we're just going to go back into the Bible because part of Worldview Watch is trying to answer your questions, listener questions. And you can always tweet them to me at Rev Fisk. I'll sometimes answer them here, sometimes try to answer them other places. But if you definitely want to end up on KFUO, you can send it to KFUO@KFUO.org. Title it Worldview Watch, my question or my question for Pastor Fisk, and we'll try to get that on the show. I love answering your questions. It's like my favorite thing. It's what gets me out of bed in the morning, is answering questions about how to apply Christianity, whether that's what does the Bible mean here or how does this affect what we believe there. Today's question is, I had to go and look this one up. This was not an off-the-top-of-your-head question, but it's a good one. And it's about a kind of a peculiar Old Testament text, Joel 3, verse 14, which I think, and I didn't do enough research on this part, but I think this text gets used in a lot of, kind of say, evangelical theological circles as a way of describing or proving what we might call decision theology. That is this idea that Christianity really boils down to, have you made Jesus your Lord yet? Have you given your heart to him? Have you stepped forward and proclaimed that now is the day that you authentically, fully, entirely are committed to Jesus no matter what? And that decision that you make, that act of the will, if I can call it that, is really the heart and center of your confidence. It's something that we Lutherans don't believe. Yeah, we think the Bible doesn't teach this. But one of the texts people might use to try to prove that it does teach this is this Joel 3, verse 14. So here's the question. Can you explain the meaning of Joel in the valley of decision, right? And you even got that word decision there. It's like someone looked it up in a concordance. Oh, the word decision's in the Bible. Therefore, decision theology is true. Well, let's look at the text. Yeah, what do you say? About 10 minutes here. Joel chapter 3. We're going to pick up at verse 9. Which follows on context, right? Context is so important to understanding everything. You can't understand a sentence without its paragraph. You really can't understand a paragraph without its book or its chapter, right? That really influences how you read or how you understand what's going on. The section around this, Joel is proclaiming that God, Yahweh, the Lord of heaven and earth, is the judge of the world, of all the nations. He's talking about how, God is planning to save. And this salvation is going to come through Judah and through Jerusalem. All the promises of old are going to take place in that holy land. Of course, that's about what Jesus does when he comes to that temple, when he dies on the cross there. But that part of this is also the rejection of our broken, fallen world. And in the Old Testament, the nation of Israel, the nation of Judah, the kingdom of Judah is a picture or a microcosm of the church, of Christianity, of the saved. And the nations, the Gentiles, the Goyim, are a picture of unbelief. Why? Because they are. They worship pagan gods. They worship foreign gods. The moment that they would cease to worship foreign gods, they would effectively become a believer, right? And part of that true Israel. And so God's condemning unbelief, and he's promising salvation to believers, which means, first and foremost, this isn't about whether or not you are, you know, on the mourner's bench about to be convinced to become a believer. That's not the context. The context is he's proclaiming judgment to those who do not believe. And so he says, verse 4, what are you to me, O Tyre and Sidon and all the regions of Philistia, right? These warmongering sea peoples that were constantly attacking Judah, but also attacking Yahweh, trying to prove that their gods were better gods. What are you to me, he says, you're nothing. You've sold the people of Judah and Jerusalem to the Greeks in order to remove them from their own border. He's condemning all unbelief, all the foreign nations. Now, we're going to skip ahead there now and really dig in at verse 9, right? But the context, judgment on the world. And the Lord says then, of judgment on the world, proclaim this among the nations. That is, to all the world, the whole universe, for the sake of the unbeliever who doesn't believe it, but maybe will if you preach it. Proclaim this among the nations. Consecrate for war. Stir up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near, let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am a warrior. Hasten and come, all you surrounding nations, and gather yourselves there. Bring down your warriors, O Lord. Let the nations stir themselves up and come to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there I will sit to judge all the surrounding nations. That is, you think you got something on me, God says? Go ahead, suit up. Come on, let's try it out. You and me, God versus man. Bring your armies, bring your chariots, bring your armor. Do whatever you think you can to stand before me, the Lord of heaven and earth. Go ahead. We'll meet in the valley of Jehoshaphat, Jehoshaphat being one of the kings of Judah. Before we go on, I want to highlight this part too. This is about context. You ever heard there's a verse, you know, they will beat their plowshares into, they will beat their swords into plowshares? It's out of the Isaiah's prophecies of the paradise that's to come after the end of the world. Well, here you have beating your plowshare into swords. And I've seen atheists online, unbelievers online say, look, the Bible doesn't have truth in it. It says beat your swords into plowshares. It says beat your plowshares into swords. So which is it? The Bible's all about violence. Well, no. He's not actually telling Christians to go be violent. He's telling unbelievers, you can come against the church with violence and it doesn't matter. Go ahead. Try. See what happens. Verse 12, let the nations stir themselves up and come to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there I will sit to judge all the surrounding nations. I'm going to bring a day of judgment. Put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Go in, tread, for the winepress is full. And there, a really interesting little tidbit here, right? Treading the winepress is normally an image of God's wrath. You get this in the book of Revelation particularly, where God's wrath is like, I forget if it's a man or an angel, that's treading grapes. But out of this graped winepress, blood flows instead. And the blood flows so deep that it covers the bridles of the horses, right? It's so deep that it drowns the world. It's a flood of blood. So treading the winepress is, I'm going to bring my wrath. But putting in the sickle for the harvest, that's I'm going to bring my gospel. So you actually have law and gospel here right in the text as the day of judgment. I'm going to harvest some. I'm going to destroy some. But you nations, you unbelievers, you go ahead and come. See what you can do. I'm going to harvest some. I'm going to destroy some. How am I going to harvest it? By those who believe in me through word, through faith. How am I going to judge? Well, you go ahead and present your case and we'll see how you do. Go and tread, for the winepress is full. The vats overflow, for their evil is great. That is, you can bring all that you want against me on this day of judgment. Your evil is great. I don't care what you present. I don't care how strong you are. I don't care how wise you are. Your evil is great. Outside of the one righteous one, Jesus, you got no hope on this day. And now the verse that we've been looking forward to, right? Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The key question, whose decision is God talking about when he talks about judgment day? Who makes the decision on judgment day? It's a pretty straight up answer, right? It's the judge. When you're in a court, who makes the decision? You present your case and the judge makes the decision. And what he's saying is, behold, multitudes, look at the wide way filled with many who have gone to destruction, who come to the day of judgment holding up something of their own and claiming, Lord, you owe me. Whether that be their sword by which they are going to fight their way into Jerusalem, whether that be their works by which they think they're going to counterbalance their evil. But what's the whole context been? Nobody's good enough. Nobody's good enough. So can you see how to take this text now and flip it on its head and make this the proof that you better make a decision for Jesus because that's the way to become good enough? Once you give your heart to Jesus, that's the one thing that you can do, this act of the will, which they say is faith, but it's a work. This act of the will to decide to follow Jesus, and that's why God would love you. It's not that you shouldn't decide to follow Jesus, by all means. Do you believe in Jesus? But follow him. Right? Make a decision. Consecrate yourself. That's what Lent is. Lent is New Year's, right? New Year's resolution time for the Christian church. Let's refocus because we know we're bad at this. Let's try to follow Jesus again. The problem is not deciding to follow Jesus. The problem is thinking that that's why he loves you, that that's what makes you a Christian, that you aren't deciding to follow Jesus because you're already a Christian. You get that? God comes. He chooses you. He sows the seed. You believe because his spirit works on you to make it so. And then you decide to follow him. But that has nothing to do really what's going on here. He's talking about in the valley, on the day that I will judge the world as the world arrays against me like an army encamped to try to prove its righteousness, the vats are going to overflow with blood, for their evil is great. And then, ooh, this apocalyptic language about a sea change, about an upturning, an inversion of reality, that a massive shift is coming that is as bizarre and changing of what's going on. It's going to be so different that you can't even fathom how different it will be. The sun and the moon are darkened, and the stars withdraw their shining. That language was used to talk about the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. That language is used to talk about the destruction of Jerusalem way back with the Babylonian exile. That language is used to talk about the move from the old covenant to the new covenant at the cross of Jesus Christ. And now that language is used to talk about the difference between now and what's going to happen after the day of judgment. And those who come thinking that now is going to matter on the day of judgment outside of Jesus, well, it's going to be a change they don't want to see happen. The Lord roars from Zion and utters his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth quake. If you come that day arming yourself in your own armor, it's going to be a terrifying day. But don't miss the rest of verse 16. But the Lord is a refuge to his people and a stronghold of the people of Israel. You come to judgment day, that valley of God's decision about you, thinking to stand on the scales of balance by your own decision. And you're going to find a terrifying, horrible thing. But if you come on that day knowing that the Lord, the God who is your judge, is also your refuge, that he is a stronghold for you, a fortress against himself, a fortress which is literally the body of the one man, Jesus Christ, who died under the wrath of God and rose to be a permanent refuge from the wrath of God, who has extended that body by great and precious promise to you, who has baptized you into himself, that you would know on the day of judgment, he's going to declare you innocent. If you come on the day of judgment that way, knowing what God has already promised, not resting on your own decision, but his decision proclaimed to you as the gospel, well, it's a whole other matter, isn't it? Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. The evil is great in this world. But as is absolutely and always the case, Jesus is a refuge for the lost. Jesus is the answer for you. The valley of decision is the day that God decides to promise you the forgiveness of sins. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news. It's been a little Worldview Watch taking your questions. KFUO at KFUO.org. If you got questions you'd like me to answer here in the future, I'm your host, Pastor Jonathan Fisk. The Lord Jesus is coming back, people. It may not be today and it may not be tomorrow, but I'll tell you this. Either way, I look forward to waking up with you at the dawn.